Welcome to American Dreams. My guest today is Derek Lobo. Derek, welcome to today's show.
Alan, great to be here, man.
So, Derek, welcome back. You've been on the show before, and it's good to have you here again. You have a new book you're putting out, but let's go through a couple areas I want to touch on. So, you're an immigrant, and you have a very interesting story. Maybe we can start out by talking about your experience in life a little bit and how you arrived at the point you came to today.
Well, you know, Alan, I think my story is the same as a lot of people, right? A large percentage of the population in North America has moved here. I was lucky I moved at a relatively young age. I was 8 years old, right? So that allowed me to sort of know the old country, but sort of, you know, learn the new world better, right? And I think that for me, I had a typical middle-class upbringing, okay? And, you know, as me, probably like you, as a baby boomer, maybe towards the tail end of the baby boom, when it came to home ownership, my first house was 3 times my income, okay? Today, for my children and my grandchildren, that number is 10 to 15 times their income, right? So housing has become a problem. And when we first moved here, housing was plentiful. You know, my father got a good working class job. We could afford a decent place to rent. After 1 year, you know, we were able to afford a house and things like that. So I think for housing ownership, that dream for newcomers is broken, okay? And is broken for their children too. So we can't just say it's broken. We've got to rethink it. And so what I've had then, what I've written the book about, is the mind shift that we need to have about home ownership, okay?
So we're going to talk about your book today, but before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about life and legacies. Yes. So fast forward, you're 93 years old on your deathbed. How do you want to be remembered after this life?
Oh, that's such a great question, because I went through this, okay? So in my day-to-day profession, I'm a commercial real estate broker. I sell apartment buildings. I work for large developers, okay? I kind of, and I say this jokingly, and there's not, I help make wealthy developers wealthier. That's my job, right? And I thought, this the question you asked me, I thought it'd be 105, maybe not 92, but, you know, whatever that date is, right? I said, what's the legacy I'm leaving behind? Well, there wasn't that much of a legacy, right? And so I asked myself this, and we all do ask ourselves this question, right? How do I sort of make a difference? Well, I had an expertise in rental housing. We have a crisis in rental affordability, right? In most of the world, probably. And I thought, if we let government solve this problem, it's just going to get bigger and bigger and more expensive, right? So how do we solve this problem without the government? So the legacy is this rethinking that I've had and gone through called the self-funding house. And the subtitle is Rebuilding the Dream of Home Ownership. And it's specifically aimed at Gen Xers, millennials, and things like that. But I think it's pretty broadly based. So it's my legacy, this book. Yes.
Excellent. So what type of projects are you working on right now to build your legacy?
Well, the book is not just a book. The book is the beginning of 3 books. So there's 1 book on the mind shift. There's the second book on how you do it. Okay, so the first book is called The Self-Funding House. The second book is called The Blueprint for the Self-Funding House. That's how you do it. And it comes with a learning portal with all the instructions to do it, whether you're a contractor, a builder, or a do-it-yourselfer. Okay, and the third book is a policy book. And that is the stakeholders of the self-funding house. What do municipalities, politicians, planners, and lenders have to do to facilitate policy that will quickly solve the housing crisis, right? And this is a big problem, and it's multivariate, Alan, right? So there's no one solution to it. But I thought, what's the biggest, fastest, cheapest, easiest way to solve this? That is to get the common man involved. Right. And then you create an army that's scalable. And that's kind of what my thought was and the philosophy behind it.
Yeah. The self-funding house intrigues me. from a title? And is this something that a lot of people can do?
I'm saying that this is something everybody can do if they choose to do it. Okay? Because it's, look, the technology of building a house or building a laneway apartment or accessory dwelling unit, an ADU, is 100 years old, right? We know how to build houses. We've been building them for a long, long time, right? The materials have changed, but essentially that technology exists. It's the mind shift change for someone who wants to own a house that otherwise thinks they can't. Fair enough? And basically, it is you build a unit, an accessory dwelling unit, within your property, legally, properly. That revenue that you get from that unit will allow you now to buy a house you couldn't normally afford, or, Alan, buy a bigger house than you normally couldn't afford, right? And now, if you think about that house as maybe Lego blocks, okay? And let's say there's three units in it. You might live in one unit at the beginning, and then you might switch to the larger unit as your family grows. Then you might take over two units, right? And then you might take over all three. And then as your children grow up and you retire, you go back to renting it again for additional income, right? So think about it as these blocks on top of each other. Look, everybody knows someone who's done this. This is not a new idea, okay? I mean, you think about probably your grandparents, your great-grandparents, and so on, when they came, to the new world, right? They shared housing. Two families lived together until they could save up enough money to, whatever. It wasn't a bad thing. And Alan, here's what made it particularly meaningful for me. The very first house I bought was a triplex. I bought a house and I triplexed it. I lived in the basement apartment, okay? And then when I got married, my wife and I, we moved up to the middle apartment. And then, so I made an upstairs tenant and a downstairs tenant, right? My upstairs tenant married my downstairs tenant, okay?
You're quite a matchmaker in the...
It's unbelievable. No, I went to their wedding. They came to my wedding. They babysat my children. I interviewed my first tenant for the book. And it was amazing. And it'd been 30 years. And I called her up and she started telling me how she thought about the house, right? So I also think that, so what this does is it creates a model for someone to buy a house, a young person. Fair enough. It creates affordable housing for the tenants who live there, because this isn't the palace in the sky costing $4,000 or $5,000, right? This is a $1,000, $2,000 rent that we're talking about here, right? So it solves two problems. It helps the young person or whoever it is buy a house. It creates affordable housing, okay? But the other thing that it solves is it actually generates money for the government instead of them spending money, because now you're paying taxes on the duplex, right? And remember, the infrastructure is all there, Alan. The road is there, the lights are there, the schools are there, the plaza's there, the transit's there, right? It really is about optimizing infrastructure, right? So it's good for everyone.
You know, Derek, you have a niche practice in the real estate market, but this business in itself is kind of one off what you normally do.
Yes.
What really caused you to write the book?
You know, you've asked me this in two different ways, right? You're a clever interviewer. I wanted to make a difference. I just want to make a difference. This was my passion project. It was my Saturday morning project, right? And I never thought, I'm a business guy. I've got employees. I didn't think about money, right? I thought about a moonshot. And in a moonshot, you can't think about money, right? And everybody knows what I mean by a moonshot, right? So number one, money wasn't my issue. Number two, I didn't know where this was going, okay? I trusted it. I said, look, everybody I told the idea of, right, the self-funding house, I got that idea early, the title. I just got encouragement from people, right? Derek, I don't know what you're going to do with this. I don't know what's going to happen, but it was one of those things where I said, I'm just going to start, okay? And I thought, there's a 1 in 100 chance, 1 in 10 chance it would work.
Now that you got the book out, who's your target audience then?
My target audience is the younger person, probably someone in their 20s, 30s, 35, somewhere, but it's also their parents. Alan, you've got 7 kids and 21 grandchildren, okay? This would be a great stocking stuffer, right? To say to them, look, guys, start thinking about a house now, right? And I'm not talking here about, Alan, changing neighborhoods. You're going to drive by and that house is going to look like the house next door. You see my point? Right? We're not where we're talking about good urban design. We're talking about following planning guidelines, but a mind shift has to occur at many, many levels. California's had it. They allow ADUs in California, right? Backyard houses, accessory dwelling units. Oh, there were 24,000 units built last year. There were only 1,000 units built, I think, in 2016, right? So when municipal planning gets, and now it's formed all kinds of entrepreneurial ventures, right? Developers who now build them, property managers who manage them, and things like that.
Now, what are the biggest stumbling blocks encountered when crafting your message?
I think, I'm not sure there's a, the biggest stumbling block to the self-funding house. I'll tell it by way of a story, okay? So when I bought my triplex and converted the house, I wasn't married, right? I started dating a girl who's now my wife, but I came with a triplex. Fair enough? She dated me, I came with a triplex, right? Had I not owned that triplex and I had married Celia, and I don't think she would have allowed me to triplex our house because she would have been afraid of tenants, okay? And that's this weird thing that people have. They are afraid of tenants. Well, you know, I think that's more of a media story and a movie story. Look, I've stayed in hundreds of hotel rooms, okay? I've never trashed one, not yet, okay? I've been in hundreds of Ubers. I haven't spilt my meal all over the back seat. People don't do that, okay? People generally take care of the property. But here was the one trick I learned. When I was renting the triplex, whoever I rented to, I visited them at the house they lived in. That was my number. Look, I did credit check, landlord check, and all that stuff. It's easy to do, okay? But I would actually go to their house and say, look, I'm just the neighborhood. We've got to fill in the lease. And I'd go and look at the house. You can tell a ton by how somebody is living. Fair enough? And then firm but fair property manager. I can tell you, I've never had a tenant problem in the years I lived in that triplex. I'm thinking I had maybe 8 or 10 people. I would say every one of them today, if I stay in touch with one of them in particular, but I would be happy to meet all of them and all of them would be happy to meet me, right? The other thing that my former tenant told me, she said, Derek, by you living in the house, I knew you would take care of it. It was your house. Your family was here, right? That's interesting. That was actually a bonus I was living there, right? Not necessarily that. So it's interesting how people think. And then when the downstairs tenant married the upstairs tenant, they moved downstairs. She found me a new tenant for the upstairs because she cared who lived there. You see my point? So it was like she felt like she was a stakeholder in the house in a way.
Now, Derek, what you're doing here seems like a global message. It's absolutely huge. Are you looking for help from others?
You know, I am a commercial real estate broker. Okay. I've written a book that maybe it's hit a bit of a nerve. Okay. What I would love to do, Alan, is to just get this message out there. Okay. And it's not just an American story. Okay. I could see, I'll visualize someone in Kenya building a thatched hut and building a small one beside it, sharing the same driveway and roadway, right? It just makes so much sense. Yeah. So I would welcome people who want to join this, right? As I said, I didn't have a financial mission when I started this. I had an idea of saying, this was my story. So it was kind of romantic for me, you know, when I was young and did this thing when I got married, had our first children. I work in the rental housing business, so I understand the shortage, right? And then I guess what excited me was and Alan, you're an entrepreneur, right? So we kind of have these ideas and we love connecting ideas together, right? So when I was able to connect the shared economy idea with the idea of we have enough capacity and capability in the world to do this, right? We want to have exponential growth because you can't solve this problem over 20, 30 years. It's got to be solved quickly, right? And building big buildings just takes too long. And then the idea of the online learning portal, okay, was to say, okay, the book, the idea of the book, if I show a picture of it, here's the book, The Self-Funding House. It's only about 110 pages. Okay. It's a 2-hour read. It's a 90-minute read. Okay. This isn't War and Peace. It's simple, right? The second book will be probably about the same length, right? The blueprint for the self-funding house, but it'll come with a learning portal that you can subscribe to. It'll have the detail that you need, right? And the third book, and I'm writing this order, is the one that we need to write for the stakeholders, because this is a solvable problem. There is enough land. There is enough everything here, right? We just need to get financing, politicians, policy people lined up thinking the same way. And I think this could move quickly if there's the political will, but then we also have to inspire the, you know, us, the common men, right, to do this. And I love the idea, Alan, of aging in place. You know, I did wind up selling that triplex, and I regret selling it, because if I still live there today, my kids are growing up, they're married, I would be renting those apartments again, preparing for, you know, I could age in place. So I was a single guy living in the basement. I was a married guy living on the ground, on the middle floor. Then I was a family guy living on the first and second floor. Then I was a business guy, because I converted my basement to an office when I first started my business, right? And then when the business got too big, I moved out, we used the whole house. But I could go back to reconverting it again, right? Or, Alan, my children, when they got married, could have lived there. Golly gosh, you have 21 grandchildren. What would it mean to you if one of your grandchildren, when they went to college, came back to your town and lived in one of your units or something like that? So I just see this as just a my story, a business story, right? And a real problem. And they just came together. We wrote the book in about, I'm going to say 8 weeks. It flowed. It just flowed. Yes.
Well, congratulations on this book. And for those who want to get a copy, how would they go ahead and do that, Derek?
Well, we have a portal or a landing page called theselffundinghousebook.com. And you can go there and you can pre-order it. And also, we'd be delighted in your feedback on it. We'd also like to hear your thoughts on what needs to go into book two and to book three. But the first part was the mind shift, right? How do you become a homeowner today? Well, it's becoming a landlord, right? And then I say this, but your first house is also your first business, Alan, okay? Because now you've got to file taxes. You've got to take track income, right? And I would say that had I not converted that house in my 20s, I wouldn't be where I am here today. It started teaching me about the fundamentals, simple enough, one unit, two units, right? But it started teaching me about marketing. I had to rent the apartments, taught me about sales. It taught me about, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, all the business skills you need for a business can start with this. So I say to people that your first house, maybe your first business as well.
All right. Well, Derek, thanks for being on today's show. It's been wonderful having you here and talking about your new book, The Self-Funding House.